Coming up on Hometown Alaska, we're celebrating Earth Day a little early. Host Dave Waldron sits down with a representative from Anchor Gardens to discuss their work with community gardens, education, and more. You'll be champing at the bit to get digging in the dirt. And on State of Art, join me, Ammon Swenson, for a conversation about the third annual Teacher Tales. We'll find out about the storytelling event that celebrates educators of all stripes. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media.
Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we're going to get down and dirty with some gardening. Today's show was inspired by Earth Day, which is this Wednesday, and how humans can minimize their impact on the planet. And my guest today knows plenty about that, as she is the network connector for Anchor Gardens, a local group that has their hands in all sort of eco-friendly projects like co-op gardens, tiny homes, and even stockpile stations, which we're going to learn more about shortly. Larissa Wright Elson, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here.
Great to have you. Happy early Earth Day to you. Do you have plans for it?
It's actually going to be my son's 21st birthday on Earth Day.
Wow.
It's exciting.
So you have plenty of plans, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, tell me about the group Anchor Gardens. As I said in the intro, you got your fingers in a lot of pies there. Mm-hmm. What is the overall main purpose of the group?
Anchor Gardens began during COVID when the whole country, the whole world, but especially Alaska, were experiencing shortages. And fortunately, well, you know, it was still COVID, so I'm not sure how fortunate it was, but it coincided with the gardening season here in Anchorage. And so a lot of gardeners, but especially folks from the Anchorage Permaculture Guild, came together with the mission of making sure that gardening could be accessible to everyone in Anchorage, regardless of being a property owner or whatever their income was. So they really set out to spread the message of earth care, people care, and fair share from permaculture to make some real changes in our community.
Yeah, we always hear so much about food insecurity in Alaska, and it seems like COVID just kind of was that big giant reminder that, yeah, it is real, and now it's going to happen to us. So what are some of the main services that Anchor Gardens offers to the public? I feel like there's quite a few of them.
Our mainstay is really having coaches in every community. So we kind of divvy up Anchorage by community council area. So our goal is always that every community council area, and I think there's about 37 of them total, have one or two coaches that know at least a little bit about gardening and about their own neighborhood. They don't need to be gardening experts. They don't have to be master gardeners or anything like that. But they are willing to help their neighbors with the microclimates that are in that area. Because what might grow really easily in my neighborhood in Sand Lake doesn't grow so well on the hillside or on the east side of town, where it's significantly colder and higher winds. So I can, as a neighbor, helping other neighbors, give advice that can help new gardeners and even experienced gardeners from other parts of town or other states be successful.
Right. There are so many microclimates in Anchorage. I didn't realize that when I bought my first home. It was like on the coldest pocket of Anchorage on the east side.
Oh, yeah. 10, 15 degrees colder on the east side.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I drive from my house to the airport, it's a 10 degree shift.
Yep.
It's insane. So you say that there's all these teachers spread out around Anchorage. How do they conduct a class, if you will? What does that look like?
Well, they don't really conduct classes. It's a little bit more informal than that and a little bit more relationship-based. So Anchor Gardens has this fantastic free to use app called Kumu. And so you would fill out Kumu with your name and community council area and what you might have to give, like maybe you have some backyard chickens and so you've got extra chicken manure, or you have a lot of trees and you've got dried leaves to give out in the fall with what you need. So maybe you need finished compost or you need grass clippings to balance out some of the other materials you have, or you need more basic things like hands-on help figuring out where to locate your garden at first. And so your neighborhood coach can come over and walk the property with you and help with those things, or refer you to resources that you need, or to other people who might need the resources that you have to give. So we're really looking at Anchorage as a whole community rather than any sort of top-down education system. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what dictates our entire structure.
You said the app is called Kumu?
Kumu.
How do you spell that?
K-U-M-U.
Oh, that's, I've never heard of that one. It sounds like a really cool idea.
It's super cool to interact with. It's all these different circles and you can go through and you can register and then you can find other people in your neighborhood based on what they've got. You can even say, hey, I've interacted with Dave Waldron before, no matter what your neighborhood is. And then I could say, oh, it looks like Dave needs finished compost. I have too much. And then I could message you or connect with your neighborhood coach and say, hey, I've got this finished compost and I know my friend Dave needs some.
I will need some.
All right.
I don't know how you knew that. Well, tell me, that's pretty cool. I like that crowd kind of sourced idea. But you also do co-op gardens, right? You have multiple co-op gardens. Where are they and how do they work?
Our major one that I think a lot of people will have driven by before is the I Street Garden. And that is a vacant lot that is loaned to us by the owner. It's right next to Nusagaya City Market. And so lots of people on their way into downtown Anchorage drive right by it. You can see a greenhouse there. You can see lots of beds. And that, I believe, began right during the height of COVID, and they brought all kinds of neighbors in to have garden plots there, teach workshops on composting, on sheet mulching or lasagna bed building to get everything started. And then those neighbors were able to connect with other neighbors. Actually, I have a friend who used to garden there, and now she's able to garden in her lot down the street using the information that she learned when she was gardening at that community garden.
Is that kind of the idea? You give them this foundation of knowledge first so that they can move elsewhere and garden elsewhere and make room for new people to come in?
I don't know that it's the goal to get people to move on, because some people are renters,
right,
and don't have the ability to garden where they are. They might not even have a deck or a balcony to have a container garden. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely a wonderful thing to see, because it is about teaching those skills and providing all of those resources so that when somebody's situation changes, they can take all that with them.
Got it. Okay. And you also have a co-op garden in a senior center. Is that right?
Yeah, we've got one out at the Chugiak Eagle River Senior Center. It looks very different from the other ones that we've had. It had a sort of a different origin story, beginning with the senior center and with another gardening club out there that had some overlap with Anchor Gardens. And so they just kept going, it's a lot more accessible. Those are raised beds and the seniors who are there have a different structure. I don't think that any of them kind of, you know, own or rent their bed, but everybody grows things together.
Yeah, such a cool idea. I love hearing about that. Well, tell me more about these stockpile stations, Larissa. They're like materials, I think lumber and soil or compost was listed as the main two things. Where are they located around town? And can people just pull up to them and start shoveling stuff into their truck? How does it work?
Maybe not at the moment, as things are still unthawing this April. Our main one is maintained with Yardacopia. They're part of ACAT, and that is at Chechako and Benson in Midtown. Folks probably drive by it all the time, but you can see these murals alongside the fence, and it is open 24/7. There are signs there that direct people where to put the things that they're donating, in order to keep everything organized. And then other folks who are volunteers with Yardacopia or Anchor Gardens can stop by and pick stuff up anytime, or help keep things organized. We also maintain smaller resource depots at the I Street Garden, at Serenity Garden, which is one of our newer gardens in Fairview down the street from the rec center, both so that the gardeners at those community gardens can have the resources that they need, but so that other people who are gardening in that neighborhood can pick things up as well.
I understand. Speaking of coaches, you're a coach yourself for in the Sand Lake area. So how does that work for you, and what do you like to teach?
Yeah, I signed up as a coach right away. I was very excited about Anchor Gardens, but at the time didn't have a lot of time to really contribute to the core team like I am now, but I have always been a coach for the Sand Lake neighborhood. I have a really large permaculture garden in both my backyard for annual vegetables and in my front yard for perennial herbs and greens and native plants. And so it was a good fit for me. As a coach, a lot of what I do is just very casual. I've got my Anchor Gardens signs out in my front yard, and when I'm maintaining things up front, people will stop and ask me questions. My neighbor across the street built me a little seed library that's mounted to a tree. He made it out of an old card catalog, and so I just repackage some of the extra seeds that I have or that I've gotten from Anchor Gardens so people can stop by and get them. But my favorite thing is to really talk to my neighbors about what it is that they're growing and how they're trying to grow it. Any issues that they're having with insects or with invasive plants or with, you know, something like spinach that just bolts too quickly. And so we can talk a little bit more about what they're doing or what they're not doing and guide things that way. I have taught a variety of different things, but I think my favorite to teach is composting. And a couple of years ago, along with Solid Waste Services, Anchor Gardens ran a series of hot composting and vermicomposting, like worms.
I've heard of that.
And then you could go on to become an advanced composter with a certificate that I've had it hanging up in, you know, whatever workplace I'm in for years now. I like composting because it just happens. It's going to happen no matter what. And it's exactly like what happens in nature. Leaves fall, things die, and soil is created. And so you're able to do that easily and probably almost no expense in your own backyard if you have a little bit of space.
Well, I definitely want to talk more about composting in just a little bit here. But before we go to break, I want to ask about one more project that Anchor Gardens is involved with, the Tiny Home Project. How did that partnership come about, and what does that look like today?
Yeah, Anchor Gardens has had a remarkable relationship with Julie in our backyard. We started years and years ago through the Permaculture Guild of Food Forest at Central Lutheran on 15th. And so when In Our Backyard began building those micro homes to help people experiencing just not having their own roof over their heads, how do you empower people by giving them the basics of what they need? Then Anchor Gardens was able to help basically foodscape the rest of that area with the assistance of the folks who are living in those homes as well in order to help take care of it. So it's beautiful there now. It's really like it. I think it's inspirational, not just for that type of community, but every type of community, that you can have a really beautiful landscape and surrounding to make yourself feel better and feel more positive no matter what your circumstances are. And everything can also be eaten, so that you are also surrounded by what is going to sustain you and help make you healthy.
So is this like a communal thing? The tiny homes are all sharing a space that they can harvest together, or do they have like designated plots?
No, I think it's communal that they're all doing stuff together. And it looked like at the end of last summer that in the more fenced area that helps keep residents safe, individuals were then growing in containers a little bit more of what they wanted or needed that was in addition to the foodscaping right along 15th and along the side street.
I love this word, foodscaping. I've never heard it before. What exactly does that mean?
I do think it's a real word.
No, I'm sure it's a real word.
It kind of popped into my head just now, but I believe it's real. It's really just landscaping, but with food. I think we see a lot more of it in Anchorage than we used to, with the folks from the municipality and other gardeners adding in kale, even if it's the more decorative kale, and cabbages. Nasturtiums are everywhere in Anchorage during the summer, and those are all completely edible. And they're nice and spicy, too. And it gives all of us something beautiful to look at, but also something that can be useful.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, it is time for us to take a short break. When we return, I'll be speaking more with Larissa Wright-Elson with the group Anchor Gardens. I'm Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today I'm speaking with Larissa Wright-Elson, who is the network connector for Anchor Gardens, a group that offers resources and expertise to anyone that has the desire to get involved in gardening, which a lot of people this time of year are doing that and thinking about that. Larissa, I thought it'd be fun to do an overview of what new things people are attempting to grow these days in the Anchorage area. We were just talking about microclimates, and this always fascinates me. Pretty much everyone can grow, like, you know, potatoes, kale, carrots, right? But we have this fun stuff being attempted. And I see it sold at, like, Costco. They'll sell, like, a cherry tree or a pear or a lemon tree. I'm like, really? In Alaska? But have you noticed a change in what Alaskans are able to grow beyond those classics that we're so well known for?
A little bit. We definitely still need season extenders, because when we have really cold, bitter winters like the one we just had, a lot of those warmer climate plants that you might be able to have outside really safely during the summer could get killed off then during the winter. So you do have to be careful. But if you have a greenhouse or you have the ability to bring that lemon tree inside your home during the winter, then you're probably okay. I would say for new gardeners, it's going to be most satisfying to stick to what everybody says is common here, and you'll experience more success. And then those of us who are experienced gardeners, I think, can branch out a little bit more into some of the more cold hardy cucumbers and tomatoes that are being developed. Typically, you could really only grow those in greenhouses. I see a lot more people, myself included, growing year-round some of those more exciting varieties in hydroponic systems in their homes, too. And my favorite, I just have to mention it at least once a day, no matter where I am, is rhubarb. Rhubarb is my favorite. It's a great foodscaping plant because it fills in a whole lot, and it is a vegetable and kind of masquerades as a fruit. I'm not sure about other things. A lot of gardeners get connected through the Anchor Gardens Facebook page and Facebook group, and there are some other fantastic gardening groups on social media where you can really see what it is that people are experimenting with and give it a try yourself. That's one reason why seed exchanges that happen around Earth Day are so fantastic, is because you can take just a few seeds. You don't need a whole package of something, but just a few in order to try out something new.
Yeah, let's talk about the Earth Day events. You mentioned that one there. What else is going on this week?
Anchor Gardens, always in the spring, has seed exchanges and seedling exchanges. We'll have another one coming up in May, and folks can check out our website for that. We are welcoming some new and experienced coaches at the Seed Lab with the Anchorage Museum. I believe that is on April 25th. That's our big kickoff and our pre-season celebration. And this year, it really feels like we need it. Mm-hmm. It felt like a really long winter. It was a really long winter. It didn't just feel like it. Yeah. It felt like something. And we also really celebrate what a lot of our partners are doing, like Yardacopia and the Botanical Garden and the Native Plant Society. And so you can see all of their events up on our calendar as well.
What does a seed exchange look like? Do you just all pick a parking lot to meet in and then just bring as many seeds as you got? Like, how does that work?
Kind of. I mean, people could organize that. That would be really exciting. I would show up. Uh-huh. Kind of like trunk or treat, right?
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
We had one in March at the Botanical Gardens. They are always fantastic to work with. And we have lots and lots of tables that are set up. And everything is organized then by type of plant. So people bring in their kind of leftover seeds, maybe from the last couple of seasons, because seeds are good for a while. As long as they've been stored decently. And then we have lots of little seed envelopes so people can take just, 20 carrot seeds instead of 200 carrot seeds.
Right. I do always wonder about that when you buy the seeds at, whatever place around town and it has an expiration date, or maybe it doesn't. And I'm wondering, like, how many seasons can I get out of this seed? Because there's no way I'm going to plant them all.
Yeah, you can get a number of seasons. It depends a little bit on the type of seed, but usually that seed packet will tell you what that germination rate is already. So maybe it's like an 80% germination rate, and then it'll just fall a little bit from year to year, but it's probably okay for at least 3 years or so is what we tell people it's safe to bring.
Good to know. Yeah. Thank you. Is there something that you're particularly good at growing, Larissa?
Besides rhubarb. I really love rhubarb. I don't know about particularly good. I'm really a little bit obsessed with perennial herbs, especially things that can grow in my front yard that the moose ignore because it's not fenced off.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Things like angelica that tastes like a really mild black licorice to I let the fireweed blow in. Because all of that is edible and useful. And in my backyard, I really loved growing beans last year. I typically grow a lot of snap peas, especially as my kids were little, because they could snack on it constantly. And actually, I think my 16-year-old still does that. And obviously potatoes, it's a lot of fun to grow a lot of different varieties of potatoes. I'll be really excited in a few years because last year I finally got around to expanding my garden so that I made room to grow asparagus. But that's like a big time investment.
Wow.
It takes like you plant the crowns and then it's 3 years later that you can start harvesting them.
I was going to ask you what your most ambitious project was. It sounds like asparagus might be it.
I think that's one of them.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned composting and it seems like you kind of have a passion for it there. I've tried to do it before, Larissa. I've done the just a pile in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
I've done like the bins with the pitchfork. And my wife did try the worm composting in the garage at one point. If I'm being honest, though, it just feels like too much work. It's totally gross to me. So what pointers do you have to make composting easier? And do you think more Alaskans can and should be composting?
Absolutely. I think a lot of people don't really understand that you don't have to have heat in your environment to make things compost. I grew up in Connecticut, and my parents had a compost heap, they called it there, which was primarily yard waste. So that yard waste and what comes out of your house too is either a brown, which is heavy in carbon, or a green, which is heavy in nitrogen. And sometimes you have things that they could be brown in color, like coffee grounds, but they're a nitrogen because they are hot. But if you take just the really basic yard waste and you've got grass clippings and leaves, as the grass clippings break down, they might get anaerobic, which is what makes them smell really bad if they're just in a big pile, mm-hmm. because there's no air circulating. So those carbons with the leaves can mix into those greens and break everything down and keep it smelling okay. That's basically what happens on like the forest floor, right? That everything kind of falls and breaks down. That basic process where you're not paying attention to the temperature, we just call cold composting because it breaks down over time, but you might have weed seeds. If you can get that compost pile nice and hot for an extended amount of time, using additional grass, kitchen waste, coffee grounds, spent grain from a brewery, chicken manure. One of the most fun things, especially if you have little kids, is to go to the zoo and get a bag of yak manure because they're herbivores, so it's fantastic. But manures from any of those herbivores will really be helpful in your compost heap or pile. And then you just need to build it so it's this nice solid block and not too spread out, and that keeps it dense. You maintain the temperature. You can do that just by feeling it, and then as it gets hot, you just turn it over so that everything kind of cooks a little bit more easily. We'll have some incredible workshops about that again this summer. I met with my friend Nick from Yardacopia just this week to start planning those out because we get very excited about composting. We see that folks spend a lot of money on bags of compost and bags of garden soil, but you can make your own.
So there's the obvious financial benefit of doing it, but mm-hmm. let's talk about the other benefit of doing it. I mean, we talk about minimizing our impact on the landfill. Mm-hmm. People probably think compost is fine for the landfill because it's biodegradable, but we want to keep as much out as possible, right?
Right. Including it's actually, compost. If it goes to the landfill, it all gets compacted and all of it is anaerobic. So it actually doesn't break down. It doesn't.
Oh, okay.
Those compost materials in the landfill will not compost.
Really?
And so Solid Waste Services has been fantastic about encouraging and helping teach people about composting so that they can keep those materials out of the landfill. But you still, and the public can go into Solid Waste Services, and there's this big viewing window for the tipping floor. You can see, you know, contractors and regular old residents just dumping tons of things that they could be doing something else with. That's why it's nice to have those resource depots around, especially the main one at Benson and Chichaco, because you can bring your materials to those resource depots. You want to kind of check out ahead of time what is needed so that you're not bringing bags and bags and bags of grass clippings. That might be a little bit too much. But leaves and kitchen waste are almost always welcome there. And then they can be used to create compost that helps all of the community gardens.
So if someone wants to get involved in composting, you know, just like a basic 101 start, what are some resources that they can find? I mean, other than your workshop that you're talking about, mm-hmm. like if they're not ready to go gather the yak poop at the Alaska Zoo, they just want something simple. Like, what's the easiest first step they can take?
I think the easiest first step they can take is to look at resources like what UAF's Cooperative Extension office has online or at their office on International, because there are a number of different handouts that'll just walk you through that process so you can follow things step by step.
Nice.
You want to have a dedicated space outside a lot of folks have luck with the big plastic barrels that you can turn. I haven't owned one of those. I use old pallets and a pallet system so that I can turn the compost all the way into the next section and then build something up from there. But I think being able to read that information or find a video on YouTube, it's what YouTube is fantastic for, then I think that's really useful because you can see how quickly and easily you can build that pile. So it's about 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet is that nice density that you want to have. And access to water, that you don't want it overwatered. So it's good to cover it with a tarp or with cardboard or something. But you do need to kind of keep it at a consistency that's a little bit like a wrung out sponge. That helps with all of those beneficial microbes and other things that will go into the pile and break everything down.
Perfect. Thank you. So Larissa, where'd you get your passion for this? And how'd you find Acre Gardens for gardening?
I think a little bit of the initial passion came from my parents and growing up in the 70s. They had a little garden and a compost heap. They weren't super serious about it, but I was always really intrigued by the wildlife that was in our compost heap, like snakes and things.
Oh, really? Okay.
It was Connecticut, so we had snakes. No snakes here. And then when we bought our house in Sand Lake, I started a small garden, and I let the raspberries from my next-door neighbor's house come through the chain-link fence. So then we had our own raspberries, and that nice neighbor divided her rhubarb, so then I had some rhubarb also. But I got really excited about it about 13 years ago, when I went on a trip with friends and visited an earthship in New Mexico. And when I came back, I got connected with the Permaculture Guild. I took a fantastic gardening class and got my permaculture design certificate. And at the time, I was a high school English teacher, so I would talk about these things and topics related to ecology with my English students because teenagers tend to be curious about the world that's around them. And so we would talk about everything from chickens and how chickens lay eggs to how seedlings grow and thrive. And I would grow plants in my classroom with my students so that they could see a little bit of that also. It's just that little bit of exposure, I think, you know, plant a seed, so to speak, with everybody. And you can just get excited and keep building your skills and talking to people and kind of figure things out from there.
You said an earth ship?
Yeah.
Okay, what is that? Should have said that sooner.
Earth ships are sustainable homes, typically not so much other buildings, but they are made out of materials that are being pulled out of landfills. So they'll use old tires and have these like rammed earth tire walls. So they'll just pound all this earth in and they'll use the tires kind of like bricks. So they're really thick walls.
Oh, wow.
And then they also use materials like glass bottles, plastic bottles, all kinds of things, rainwater collection systems, solar panels. My favorite part about it, though, is that earthships always have some sort of greenhouse where at the front of the home that recycles the gray water from the home and waters the plants with that gray water, whereas the black water will go out into, you know, the more like typical black water sewage collection area.
Do we have any earthships in Anchorage
in
Alaska?
We don't, but there is a building in Eagle River in the valley as you're heading back toward the Eagle River Nature Center. Mm-hmm. I don't know who owns it now, but it used to be Cindy Carnes, who is one of the founders of Anchor Gardens.
Oh, okay.
And it is not an Earthship, but it's a really creative building that has composting toilets and vermicomposting built into the structure. It's got a pond inside and a greenhouse. And really, like, in that area that gets so much shade because of the mountains, it's pretty fascinating to see all of these plants thriving when you feel like maybe they're not getting enough sun, but they're getting a lot of passive solar that keeps them up.
I'm going to have to go check this out. Sounds super cool. Well, I'm assuming, Larissa, that Anchor Gardens is mostly volunteer run, if not completely. Mm-hmm. So how can people volunteer their time and become like a fellow teacher like yourself and inspire some gardeners?
Oh, yeah. Well, we love that. So the best thing to do first is to go to anchorgardens.org and officially sign up through that Kumu app. And then from there, check out some of what we have on social media. But on our calendar, we have our core team. So a core team operates a little bit like a board of directors would for a more traditional nonprofit, but we have an intentionally flat structure so that anybody who has a great idea can help make that happen. So we have a lot of super volunteers, one who organizes monthly garden potluck picnics during the summer, where you can go to a different neighborhood anywhere in Anchorage and see what they have growing, see how they might have incorporated animals from bees to chickens to other small livestock and ask them questions and also connect with other gardeners. That's one of my favorite things to go to, especially if it's sunny, but even if it's a little drizzly, then you have a little bit more time to connect with more and more people. And we'll have a seedling or somebody who wants to change the name to a crop swap in May. I forget exactly when the date is, but that should be up on our calendar. And that is in the old Boys and Girls Club area of Spinard on a beautiful lot that has some gardens on it and that somebody has donated that space year after year for us to have that event.
All right. Well, I just have one last question. Mm-hmm. We mentioned the cold winter, the long cold winter multiple times on the show. What are you most looking forward to for this upcoming gardening season?
Just some of the melt. My husband does a wonderful job of clearing off the roof, but he has to shovel the roof onto the deck and then the deck onto the garden. And so part of the garden is under like 6 feet of snow right now. My 16-year-old son is really working on growing fruit trees. And so we planted some nice little apple trees last year. And I have my fingers crossed that they survived the winter. I'm not super optimistic about it, so we might have to replant. But it's a lot of fun. I have my kids are old. One of them is going to be 21 and the other one is 16. And so since they've grown up around gardening, I think one thing I look forward to every season is what they are going to grow and what they get excited about. And they do like to lecture me on all the things that they believe I don't know, which I am. I'll say I'm very patient about that. Mother's Day is coming up, so I got to be nice if they listen to this later.
Nice. Well, I love that your snap pea story ended up with them being passionate about you know, gardening and growing things. I think that's really cool. Well, I want to thank my guest, Larissa Wright-Elson. She's the network connector for Anchor Gardens. Larissa, thanks for coming in and getting us excited for gardening season and Earth Day.
Yay, thanks.
Thank you. After this short break, we'll be back with State of Art. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art.
We're joined by Teacher Tales founder Sarah Kronick, co-host Matt Sugita, and Cheryl Cox-Williams, president of the Anchorage chapter of the NAACP, who are this year's nonprofit partner. Kronick says the goal of Teacher Tales is to bring people together.
We all are in and of this world and this place and this planet, and we all are aware that, you know, there's a million distractions a lot of divisive forces out there. And Teacher Tales, what our intention around it is to be a balm, a medicine for our time, for our community, to remember that we're in this together. So let's come together and let's celebrate learning. Let's celebrate these educators who are a phenomenal folks. And let's partner with amazing local organizations and nonprofits and find our strengths together.
Matt, so you are a co-host of this event and a teacher yourself. I'm sure throughout your long career of teaching, you've probably had a lot of varied experiences. Could you maybe just kind of discuss some of the experiences that teachers have that maybe some of these stories might be relating to?
One of the most gratifying things about teaching, obviously, is to reach a kid on their level, and the understanding of the material is just black and white. It's just clear to them. On the other hand, too, it's very, very special for us to reach a student on an emotional level, to the point where I just got an email from a student that talked about, thank you for being a role model and believing in me. There's not a lot of people in my life that believed in me, but you did. And I'm coaching now and I'm going back to school. And it's just stories like that, that just, I have a file at school for when I have bad days, and I just pull the thing out and it's one of those letters, and it's so uplifting and so emotional, and I love it. I mean, that's just part of it. But as far as for Teacher Tales, you know, it's like Sarah said, it's everybody's an educator at some point in their life. You know, they're teaching somebody how to drive or how to kick a football 50 yards, teaching somebody how to garden. It's just amazing. And we don't want to pigeonhole Teacher Tales for just being for teachers, legitimate teachers that have a teaching certificate. You know, I mean, there's a lot of learning going on, a lot.
Can we expect all of these stories to always be these kind of wholesome, thank you for all the work that you've done for us? Or are we going to get maybe some other alternative stories?
You know, it's funny because Sarah's heard a few of the stories and the pitches and stuff, and I have yet to hear them. And it's always a kind of a surprise to me about hearing some of these stories. Some of them are very spiritual. Some of them are educational. Some of them are just life aha moments. So it's not all about the classroom. It's all over society.
And one of the questions that we pose to the storytellers is to really have them take a walk and ask, what is asking to come through right now? What are the stories that you carry that are really important for people to hear? We all enjoy a great feel-good story, but I tell you what, there is something to be said for those stories that have everybody in the room weeping. You know, the more real these educators can be about what's it like to have boots on the ground right now, in the joy, in the despair, in the heartbreak, in the treachery that happens. I mean, we need to hear it, right? Educators have incredible voices and incredible stories, so we welcome it all. And really, in service to what's being asked, what's going to really help the folks in the audience that hear these stories down the road? What's going to help the next seven generations? What do they need to hear?
It's got to be the type of situation where, I mean, how often can an educator maybe just speak so candidly about their experience? I mean, maybe between individual coworkers, teachers, stuff like that. But I can't imagine that there's a big platform for teachers to really just be able to speak candidly about what it's like, some of their life experiences and stuff like that.
Honestly, that's one of the impetuses for Teacher Tales. I was in a process of healing and really around my voice being cut off and not having a place where I could share some of what my life experience had brought. And so Teacher Tales was an opportunity not only for me to find my voice, but to help give exactly that platform for folks to come and share in a real way.
You're doing some other cool stuff. So you have been partnering with nonprofit organizations for each one of these performances. Could you tell me what the current one is and then maybe introduce our other guest here?
Oh, I would love to. Yes. So this year we are partnering with the NAACP, the Anchorage chapter, and we have right in between Matt and I is Cheryl Cox Williams, and she is the president right now. And take the floor, Cheryl.
Yeah. So, Cheryl, I mean, you know, with this partnership with Teacher Tales, what do you think was the motivations, or why was it a good fit for NAACP and Teacher Tales to maybe work together?
It's a natural fit. Our community is all about the good story and good storyteller. And that's a great place for us to preserve our culture and to show our representation. Teacher Tales and NAACP are going to combine storytelling, civil rights, advocacy, and education leadership. And it's obviously going to strengthen our community engagement, our teachers' voices, and just promote the equitable education outcomes that we want. Because everyone, at the end of the day, wants to be heard in the way that they want to share. And our advocacy has always been to have that equity available to everyone. And story-based advocacy and those types of campaigns are the ones that resonate. Sarah said a good cry. Well, it means that that person connected with you at your bandwidth, at your feeling of the meta. It was something in your fiber. And only people who speak from the heart can give you that.
Mm. Yeah. Nice. I mean, do you have any connections with, I mean, obviously we mentioned that, you know, everybody can be an educator in some way or another. Do you have any connection to education? Were you a teacher or anything like that?
My adult life was the military. And at every given moment, you have to coach, mentor, and train. And now I'm a grandma, so it's just elevating it.
It's got to be a little more fun, though.
Well, you see how quickly they can take your good and run with your bad.
What are you hoping for with this partnership with Teacher Tales and NAACP?
Bringing back the story, because stories also create better listeners.
Mm.
And that is something that we've been devoid of in our discourses. We're ready to jump in and say something. We haven't fully listened. Teacher Tales will ask you to pause, give your full attention to the speaker, not for you to change the story, not for you to make it right, but for you to spend a moment in their shoe and breathe.
Let's go around and maybe just kind of talk about what we're looking forward to most. So I guess, you know, Matt, as an educator slash you're going to be the MC up on stage, what are you looking forward to most about this event, either just being there or being a part of it?
You know, for me, I've given plenty of speeches in public and things, but to be on a stage was very foreign to me. So the first year that I did this with Sarah, I was a little scared and a little bit nervous. But as time goes on, I'm a little bit more comfortable, especially hearing feedback from people saying, you're good, you're great. I didn't hear any bad stuff yet. So, but the one thing that I would like to say about this year is, you know, the teachers in Anchorage School District just got done with finalizing a contract. And there's a lot of people that are disappointed and there's a lot of people that are happy. For me personally, I use Teacher Tales as a healing moment for everybody. And to hear some of the stories that are uplifting or to hear some of the stories that are sad, just to show that teachers are people too, you know. Mm-hmm. And as far as every student that I have, I said, you better, if you see me in a grocery store, you better say hello because I'm going to take it personal if you don't. And that's the kind of thing where we're people too. We like to go have fun just like everybody else does. And we're people. And that's the message that I like to take out.
Yeah. Cheryl, what are you most excited about with this? And maybe your partnership, or maybe are you just going to sit back and enjoy the stories?
Combinations. I am delighted that a teacher of our organization brought this to our attention. She's a very big proponent, participant. Ms. Rosalind Grady Weish would be remiss not to mention her. This is my feeling of how it should be when you realize that we're all related and interrelated. And our organization has always been, from 1909, we have always been collaborators. We've always had those opportunities to get better at what we do because we embraced the fact that we had to partner. Educators are some of our largest number of members of NAACP. And we have the Etheldra Davis Elementary School. Her daughter is still a member of our organization.
Wow.
Principal. The Betty Davis East High I know that Senator Bette Davis is looking down, very proud to be a part of the East High experience. Mm. We know that education and being educated for the Black and Brown of America is how we were able to take care of our families. Our teachers grounded us. Our teachers molded us. And it's important that our teachers understand us and we understand them. Everyone's coming from their own milieu, and we need to appreciate it. Mm-hmm. It would be remiss for NAACP not to be a part of Teacher Tales.
Follow that, Sarah. Sarah, what are you most excited about for this? I know that this is kind of like your baby. I'm sure you are just terrified, but excited, stressed, and, you know, just all the above.
Me?
But
no, not at all.
Can you see that on her face?
You're glistening. It's just sweat is just pouring down your face right now. No, what are you most excited about for? I know that you enjoy this.
For me, it's a gift to not only to offer this, but it's intended to be a gift. In a time where there seems to be like a lot of taking in culture, it's like, give me this. Teacher Tales is a way to give back. One of my favorite parts of the process is being in these story coaching sessions before and really helping educators speak from their heart. And so when I'm on stage during the show and I get to hear these stories that these phenomenal educators have shared, and they are fully in themselves, it's an embodied experience. And the audience feels that. And, you know, people are really lit up afterwards. They're lit up. There's tears down it's very touching to be in on. And, you know, because these lands, this place, I am born and raised on these lands. And I left for a long time. And I returned in the last 10 years intentionally to be of service to this place, all of the peoples that are here, and to honor the memories. And they're not all easy memories either. And to remember them and reckon and do something a little bit different. And so this is my and our attempt at doing something a little different. Let's come back to, it's not that, it's very old, right? Let's remember, like, we've always told stories forever. And so let's come back and remember that we are all of these beautiful threads of story.
We just heard from Sarah Kronick, Matt Sugita, and Cheryl Cox Williams. We were discussing this year's Teacher Tales. The storytelling event will be held on Wednesday, April 29th from 6 to 9 p.m. in the Beartooth Theater. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
And that's all for our show. Thanks to my guest, Larissa Wright Elson. Ammon Swenson produces this show. You can find us at the Hometown Alaska page on alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Dave Waldron, and thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.